Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Days and two episodes of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with Bob Bailey. Enjoy.
Johnny Dollar.
This is Harry McQueen, Johnny, up here in Gloucester, Mass.
McQueen?
That's right, 4 State Mutual.
Oh, sure, Harry. How are you? What's on your mind?
Johnny, I have a real funny one for you.
Okay, so I'm laughing.
Oh, I mean funny peculiar, you know.
Do I? Why don't you tell me about it? We'll see.
Well, it appears that somebody is threatening the life of one of our clients.
You call that funny?
I told you, Johnny.
Yeah, you told me. What's the name of this client?
Amos R. Weatherby, an old retired sea captain. Lives in a little town of Annisquam, up on Cape Ann.
How much insurance does he carry?
$50,000, straight life.
And who's the beneficiary?
His pretty young niece, Thelma Jane Weatherby.
Oh?
She lives with him, sort of takes care of him.
But she just can't wait for him to die a natural death. Hmm?
Oh, wrong, Johnny. She's the one who called me about it a few minutes ago. Asked that you be sent up there.
Well, now, Harry, you know as well as I do that if she's smart...
And she is.
And if she has got any intentions, the best way to keep suspicion from herself.
Wrong again, Johnny. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
Just wait till you see and talk to her. Well?
Young, did you say?
In her late 20s.
And, pretty?
Very. The most gorgeous girl I think I've ever seen.
Okay, then, Harry, give me the address and telephone her that I'm on my way.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly,
Johnny Dollar. Now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the 4 State Mutual Insurance Company, Gloucester, Massachusetts office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Bolt Out of the Blue matter. Knowing the Cape Ann country pretty well, I decided to use my own car on this one. So, expense account item 1, 1470, mileage at the rate of 10 cents a mile. And a bargain for the company at half the price. Annisquam, on the northwestern end of the Cape, is a pleasant little settlement, unspoiled by the vacation crowds. A kind of quiet summer haven for writers, poets, and painters, with a few large and very old homes. The address that Harry McQueen gave me turned out to be one of them. Set on a high, sandy knoll, it was a big frame house with hip roof, shingled turrets and cupolas, half a dozen gables and dormer windows, all of it dripping with gingerbread and covered with Boston ivy. It looked out over the sparkling blue waters of Annisquam Bay. On one corner was a big tower with a platform on top surrounded by a heavy, well-polished brass railing. A flagpole carried not only the national ensign, but a couple of signal flags. On separate lines below a sort of yardarm, I guess you'd call it. Another shorter pole supported a weather vane and one of those revolving things to measure wind velocity. The whole place, in spite of its weather-beaten age, was in good condition. It was what the owner, according to Harry's description of them, would probably call shipshape. All very interesting and colorful. What interested me most, though, was the vision that greeted me at the front door. And I mean vision.
Yes? Oh, you must be Johnny Dollar.
Any description of Thelma Jean Weatherby could only end up in the Department of Understatement. She was tall, well-tanned, and beautiful. A sort of honey blonde with clear, exciting blue eyes. The sort of figure that you dream about. She was wearing a well-cut pair of blue silk capris.
Johnny?
And a blouse of lighter blue chiffon. The freshening breeze caught a wisp of her hair and gently flicked it across that beautiful face in a sort of caress. I caught the faint scent of arpège.
Johnny, what's the matter with you?
Huh?
You are Johnny Dollar, aren't you?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. I'm sorry, Miss Weatherby.
Miss Weatherby?
Thelma?
Thelma Jean. But come in, Johnny.
Yeah, sure.
The captain has just gone up to the bridge to look for the weather so we can talk safely.
The captain?
My uncle. Captain Amos Weatherby.
Oh, boy.
And the bridge is on that tower on the corner of the house.
I see.
He spends most of his time up there. It was about Captain Amos that I called the insurance company.
So McQueen told me.
Sit down, Johnny. And would you like a nice cool drink or something after your long drive?
Well, I take it you'd like to tell me what this is all about while the captain isn't here, so why don't we save the amenities for later, huh?
All right. I can tell you all about it in 2 minutes.
All right.
I was engaged to a fellow.
That I can believe.
His name was Roger Burton. Until a couple of weeks ago, when the captain, he didn't like Roger from the start. Well, he found out some rather unsavory things about him.
Like what, Thelma Jean?
Roger never told me, Johnny, but he'd been married. Twice, as a matter of fact. And both of his wives died under very funny circumstances.
I see.
Also, they both had considerable money. Which I will, if anything ever happens to Captain Amos.
So I understand. His insurance.
So I not only broke off with him, but Captain Amos literally threw him out of the house. And believe me, in spite of his age, he could do it.
And now?
Before he left, Roger told Captain Amos he'd get even with him. He said that he'd kill him.
You mean just like that?
Yes. He even boasted that he could do it and get away with it. The same as he did with a couple of nosy wives. Those were his very words.
Hmm.
You have no idea what a horrible person he became after the captain showed him up. It was like a maniac.
Well, then you're lucky to be free of him.
You bet I am. It'd be a long time before I fall for any sweet talk again.
Oh, it'd be a terrible waste, Mama Jean.
What?
Yeah, like you.
Oh, Johnny, not you.
No, I'm just kidding. Or am I?
You better be. And yet, if all the stories I've heard about
you...
Oh,
I don't believe one of them. And to prove that I didn't come up here just because Harry McQueen said you're the most beautiful, the most gorgeous
girl.
Harry
McQueen told you that?
Yeah, sure, right, 1,000%. But
then
now...
if I'd known that, and if you hadn't come, I'd never have forgiven you.
Yeah, but now let's get down to what...
Especially after what he said over the phone about you.
Like what?
Oh, that you're an old, dull, dodgy, pedantic...
Well, I'll sue him. And I'll certainly try to prove otherwise. But right now...
Now, Johnny.
Now, let's get down to business. Well?
Well, after the captain threw him out, we thought that was the last we'd see of Roger, in spite of what he'd said. In spite of his threat.
But?
Johnny, somebody has been prowling around outside this house at night. I've only caught glimpses of him, of his shadow, really. But I'm sure it's Roger Burton. It can only mean one thing, Johnny. He's here to carry out his threat against Captain Amos.
Roger Burton, you've seen prowling around the place?
Yes, Johnny, and only at night. And he's supposed to have left Annisquam, to have gone out west or something. Now, don't you see what that means? That he's going to carry out his threat to kill Captain Amos. We've got to stop him somehow.
If you're right about all this.
Oh, if only you knew what a terrible person he is.
And yet you were engaged to be married to him.
Well, that was before the captain showed him up for what he really is, a wife killer.
Well, you admit yourself it's never been pinned on him.
Because he's clever. That's why he boasted that he could kill my uncle and get away with it. And now that I've seen him here... Johnny?
He hasn't made his presence around here known to anyone else, Thelma Jean.
I'm sure he doesn't know that I've seen him. But now...
Well, just what has he done?
All I know is that I've seen him, or his shadow, poking around outside in the yard between here and the cell. Then last
the cell?
Night...
What's that?
Look, you can see it from this window. There.
That concrete building, whatever it is, at the edge of the property?
It used to be a kind of jail back in the days of the sailing ship. Now the power company uses it for transformers or whatever you call them.
Yeah, I see the power cables leading down from the pole.
I've looked for his footprints out there in the mornings, but there's always a wind at night, so...
Maybe I'd better take a look in that cell, as you call it.
Oh, it's all locked up, Donnie. And the tiny windows with the bars over them are so dirty you can't see a thing inside.
Have you any reason to think he somehow got into it? Hey, the storm's really coming this way.
Yes, and Captain Amos will love it. but now, Johnny...
Well, hadn't you better get him down off that tower before it hits?
During storm? Why, you couldn't drag him down with a turning mule team.
Oh.
Take him back to the old days when he used to ride out of storm on the open bridge of a sailing ship.
Thelma Jean, does he know about Roger showing up again?
No, Johnny, I haven't told him. But listen, I've been trying to tell you.
Tell me what?
That I not only heard him crawling around last night, but this morning I found some ladder marks in the ground.
Where?
Out beside the tower. As though he'd used a long ladder to get up to it from the outside.
Ladder marks?
I don't know what else they could be.
This pillar, and for the moment we'll assume that it is Roger Burton.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
He's made no attempt to enter the house?
He's smart for that. And don't forget, Johnny, he doesn't know that I've seen him around again.
Well, before this storm really breaks, Thelma Jean, I'm going to take a look at that transformer building out there and see if...
You better hurry, Johnny, before...
Thelma Jean!
Yeah, Captain?
Where are you?
In here.
Where in tarnation did you put my sou'wester?
It's up in the cabin, just below the bridge where it always is.
I told you the storm was making up. It's going to be a big one. Now you got to get me back on the bridge to... Well, now who's this, Thelma Jean?
Captain, this is Johnny Dollar.
Dollar, huh?
Hiya, Captain Amos.
Another crooked landlubber come here to trouble you?
Oh, no, Captain. Johnny, just an old friend who dropped in.
Yeah?
With a storm coming up, I...
Big one, I tell you. Been in all the papers. But me, I told you it was on the way 5-6 days ago. The way the barometer on the bridge has been behaving.
Yes, I know. So I've asked Johnny to stay for the night.
Oh? Well, whatever me little girl wants, Thelma Jean, you know that. But, Johnny?
Yes, sir?
You do anything to hurt me, little girl, and by Jupiter, I'll kill her.
No, don't worry, Captain.
All right. Saw Wester's in the cabin up there?
Aye, sir.
Then I'll see you below here when the storm's over.
I'll bring your dinner up to you.
Oh, when I write another song? Don't be silly, woman.
Aye, sir. Johnny, if you're going out to look at that cell...
First, I want you to show me where you found the letter marks, okay?
Aye, sir.
The marks in the ground were still quite plain at the base of the ivy-covered tower. The ladder must have been a tall one, high enough to reach the platform that the captain called the bridge. And I found it, or rather a couple of things. A heavy lightning rod extended up the side of the tower, well hidden by the ivy. But the bottom of it had been sawed off, making it useless. Also hidden by the ivy was a wire, an insulated copper wire, too heavy to cut without tools, but certainly not big enough to take a lightning bolt. The wire was lashed to the upper section of the lightning rod. The other end disappeared in the ground at my feet. And it led away toward the cell, the little transformer station. It was dark now, and the storm was building up fast. I dashed back into the house, up to the second floor, and then up the winding stairway to the captain's bridge.
You better lash yourself under the rail, Johnny. This wind will blow you clean off of the deck into the sea.
Looks like you're right, sir.
I told her this nor'easter is going to be a big one, and it is, Johnny. Reminds me of one night off the Azores. That was back in... What are you doing there, Johnny?
This upper end of the lightning rod was 6 or 8 feet from the side of the tower, held there by big insulators. But again, the heavy copper wire, again hidden by the ivy. It connected the rod with the brass railing where the captain was holding on for dear life against the wind. And it meant that the railing was the cleverest, most diabolical instrument for murder that I had ever seen. Captain Amos.
Listen to her blow, Johnny.
Listen, we've got to go below.
Below? And miss a storm like this? Come on, hard and a thundered like this, dare you?
Listen to me. Keep away from that rail.
Let go of this rail, it'll blow us into the sea.
I tell you, get away from that
rail. Keep your hands off me, you blubbering young...
Sorry. I dragged him off his so-called bridge and down into the little room below, then hoisted him onto my shoulder and started down the circular stairway.
What happened to him?
I'm afraid I had to knock him out.
What?
To get him off that platform up there.
No, Johnny, you shouldn't have. He'll never forgive you for...
For what? For preventing him from getting electrocuted?
Oh.
Better give him some brandy or something.
Oh, Johnny, don't you understand? Didn't you see the lightning rod up there?
You bet I did. Right next to the platform. And while you're at it, you can bring a slug of that for me.
Oh. Don't you understand? Lightning wouldn't hit a rod like that, not once in 100 years in 100 years, Johnny, here.
Thanks.
What it does is clear the air of static electricity all around the place, so the lightning won't strike nearby.
Yeah, that's what you
think. Don't you see what you've done to him? I'll never forgive you for this. Here, darling.
Oh. Now listen, Thelma Jean.
Oh, Johnny, you've heard him.
Well, I'm sorry, but now listen.
Yeah, you're going to be a lot more sorry.
Thelma Jean.
There's nothing you can say,
listen,
Johnny.
Listen to me. You keep him here. Keep him away from the bridge until I get back here.
Come back here, Johnny. You...
Just keep him there. Outside, with the aid of occasional flashes of lightning, I found my way to the concrete transformer house. There, I found out how Roger Burton, in spite of the heavy padlock on the door, had got into it. By the simple device of pulling the pins out of the hinges. And who was sitting there waiting for me with a .38 in his hand?
Close the door, mister. Back up against it. Go ahead.
You don't give me much choice, do you?
I can only tell you that if you make one move towards me, I'll pull this trigger. Your body won't be found until the annual inspection of this little transformer station. That'll be 4 months from now, and I'll be a long way away from here.
I see.
Probably have to kill you anyway, mister. After I get rid of that meddling old man up in the tower, the old fool calls the bridge.
Up on the tower, Burton?
Yeah, I saw you drag him away from there through this window. Just before a good flash of lightning that could have been my cover-up. But don't worry. He'll be back. Hanging on to that railing, riding out the rest of the storm. And when he is...
The rest of this madman's murder weapon was all too obvious now. Up in the tower, the brass railing was wired to the disconnected lightning rod. On the lower end was the copper wire I discovered. And this end of the wire, here in the blockhouse, was connected to a 22,000-volt transformer.
You see how it works, mister? He goes back up there and grabs hold of the rail. I throw the switch. And the power on this line will not only kill him, but melt away the copper wire. Destroy the evidence. Only nobody will look for evidence. Because they'll all think a bolt of lightning killed him.
All right, Burton, listen to me.
No. Look. I can see him. In the room where you carried him. And look through the window beside you. You can see him, too.
I can see him all right. Starting back up the circular stairway, back up to the bridge.
You think that Thelma Jean can stop him? Never!
If he ever got there, if he touched the railing, Burton would throw the switch, would electrocute him. But that miracle, once in 100 years, the bolt of lightning out of the heavens. Lightning had struck the rod high up on the tower, had streaked down the wire into the blockhouse, had fairly exploded inside of it. The force had blown me out through the door, and it was a couple of hours later inside the house before I was able to move. Burton, holding the switch, had been killed instantly. I'm glad I hadn't tried to get any closer to him. It was a bolt out of the blue. It was justice in its own strange fashion. Expense account total, including a checkup by one of the local medicos, a new clothes, mine were in shreds, incidentals, and the trip back to Hartford, $171.50. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Star, to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a vicious racket that a lot of respectable people fall for, that you ought to know about. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Carlton G. Young, Ralph Moody, and James McCallion. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Jim Matthews speaking.
Johnny Dollar.
Well, now that's nice. What can I do for you?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, it's quite all right, and it's granted. Granted. And now that's all you have to say.
No, wait a minute. Who are you?
Wait a minute. Well, what for? I'm busy. I'm a busy man.
Alvin Peabody Cartwright.
Who?
You.
That's right. Cartwright.
Well, what are you calling about, Mr. Cartwright?
Calling who?
Me.
Well, who are you?
Johnny Dollar. Listen.
Oh, well, Johnny, what a fortunate coincidence. You're just the man I want to talk to.
Coincidence?
Of course, that you happened to call me this way.
Well, I'm afraid it was the other way around. What's on your mind, Mr. Cartwright?
Johnny, I'm being threatened.
Oops, again?
Yes, sir. And since my life's insured by the Continental Insurance and Trust Company, well, that makes it an insurance matter.
Yeah, well, now look.
And I refuse to let anybody but you look into such matters. So, Johnny, I want you to come over here to Lakewood and see me right away.
Yeah, well, Mr. Cartwright, you're sure this isn't just some...
Yes?
Well, you know, a couple of times in the past, that is, these emergency calls of yours.
You think I'm joking? Well, I'm not. You failed to come here and protect me against this threat, and only two things can happen. First, I can be murdered.
And
second, I'll cancel all the rest of the insurance I have with that company.
After you've been murdered.
And so you get yourself on over here right away.
Mr. Cut, hello? Well, here we go again. And yet, I wonder.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Continental Insurance and Trust Company Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the deadly chain matter. Thanks to Alvin Peabody Cartwright, I've been involved now and then in some real wild cases, real crazy. On the other hand, he's an erratic old eccentric, but extremely wealthy. As a result, he's not only been the target of a lot of rackets, but has come very close to being murdered more than once. So, item one on the expense account, $1 for a taxi to the office of Bill Ferguson at Continental Insurance and Trust.
No, Johnny, he hasn't said a word to me. He tell you what kind of threat he's received?
No, Bill. As usual, he told me nothing.
Well, it doesn't matter, but with the millions worth of insurance we've written for Cartwright, and I mean millions, and to be sure we don't lose his account to some other company, well, we can afford to pamper him a bit, which is to say we can well afford to pay your expense account, even if all he wants to do is say hello to you.
Okay, then, Bill. I'll run over to his home in Lakewood and see him.
Of course, if he really is being threatened...
Don't worry. I'll let you know about it. Expense account item 2, 570, mileage on my car to Lakewood. For my money, it's one of the prettiest little towns in all of New England, home of a lot of wealthy retired people. The Cartwright place, where the old man lives alone, sits on top of a low hill at one side of the lake, with 2 or 3 acres surrounding the fine old house. Hi, Mr. Cartwright.
Johnny Dollar! Oh, well, this is an unexpected pleasure.
Unexpected?
Come in, boy. Come in. Come in.
Oh, thanks. Well, sir, how are you this fine July afternoon?
Afternoon? It's almost evening. Can't you see that?
Well, how are you anyway?
Oh, I'm terrible, John. Oh, I'm just terrible. That rainy weather the past couple of days, I've hardly been able to talk.
Well, there's been nothing wrong with today. A lot of nice warm sunshine.
Today? Oh, today I've been feeling fine. Whatever made you think otherwise? Oh, and tell me, whatever brought you here to Lakewood?
A phone call, Mr. Cartwright.
Oh?
Yeah, from you. You said you wanted to see me right away.
I said I wanted to see... Oh, yeah. Oh, of course I did. And you know why?
Why, sir?
Because I refuse to do anything foolish, that's why. And yet if I don't, Johnny, I'll get myself killed. Just like Hector Kenworthy and Alpheus J. Perrin.
If you don't what, Mr. Cartwright?
Carry on the chain letter I received.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
That's a fact. That's a fact. Look here. At this. continue this chain, it says. And you will not only receive a lot of money when your name reaches the top of the list, but in exactly a dozen hours... A dozen hours is exactly 6 days, yeah. I figured that one out.
Yeah, well, go on, Reed.
Yes, now, here. In exactly a dozen hours, you will have unexpected great good luck.
Oh.
But if you break the chain in a dozen hours, dire disaster will overtake you.
Oh, now, look. Surely you don't believe that kind of junk.
This very same letter was received by the two friends of mine I mentioned, Perriman out in Chicago and Kenworthy out in Los Angeles. They broke the chain. In exactly 6 days, they were both dead.
Coincidence.
Oh, no. No, sir. This is a vicious, murderous racket.
Well,
I'm sure of it.
Why do you say that, Mr. Carter?
Because of the way they died, Johnny.
Oh?
Yes.
Then maybe you'd better tell me about it.
Los Angeles, died exactly 6 days after he broke the chain of these letters. Just the way the letter said he would.
Coincidence, I tell you, Mr. Cartwright, or at most a result of some superstitious fear that the letter instilled in him.
No, sir.
Well, that's what these chain letters do. They hold out that phony, hollow promise of giving you something for nothing. And they scare you into doing it, work on your superstition.
Johnny...
And if you think superstition is dead in this enlightened age, you're wrong. Why, some of these chain letters even include a religious-sounding prayer for good luck.
Let me explain.
And you know the only people who profit by the letters that ask to send money? The people who start them, or maybe one or two others out of the millions who send them along. Millions of suckers, that
is. But, Johnny, that isn't...
Look, ask anybody you know, anybody who's ever carried on the chain, how much did they get out of it? Nothing.
Well, now, this one is only for an exclusive group of wealthy, retired people.
Oh, sure. But take my word for it, it's worthless.
But don't you see...
Even if it's one of those that doesn't require sending any money, you can be sure the crook who got it going either has some ulterior purpose or he's just a plain crackpot. Anybody who gets scared into going on with it ought to have his head examined.
Johnny, will you listen to me?
And if they want you to send money... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Cartwright. Go ahead. Just how did your friend in Los Angeles die after a dozen hours had passed?
Yes, well, now... The same as my other friend, Alpheus Perriman in Chicago.
Yeah, well?
They were both of them run over by a hit-and-run driver at exactly the time the chain letter said disaster would overtake them.
Yeah. You know they're against the law, don't you? Chain letters for any purpose.
Of course they are, and they should be. But you just listen to this, and this is why I'm worried.
Yeah?
A dozen hours after he received this letter and carried on the chain... Admiral Parley Baron came into a great fortune.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you see. Now, and this one. Adjutant General Frederick Melchior was suddenly and miraculously cured of cancer.
Same old junk.
No, listen. But a dozen hours after Hector Kenworthy of Los Angeles broke the chain... That's my friend, Johnny, that Hector.
Yes, I know.
And after A.J. Perriman of Chicago broke the chain, they were both dead. Yeah, you see that? Right here.
Let me see. And if you break the chain, beware. The same thing can happen to you. It will happen to you.
Yeah. You see, Jimmy?
I think maybe you're right. This is the same kind of scare stuff, but it goes a little bit too far.
Well, it isn't the $100 I'm supposed to send.
$100?
Yes, $100 in cash to the name at the top of the list.
Exclusive list of honest, wealthy, retired people.
Exactly. And do you know who else has received one? Here in Lakewood?
Who?
Mrs. Templeman, the rich widow who lives over at Piney Woods, and Wilfred W. Winterbottom, the retired oil millionaire.
This name at the top, the one who gets the $100, Mr. Daniel Stringer.
Yes, is the address, care of Post Office Box 101, New York, Zone 84, New York.
I don't know what part of New York that postal zone is, but believe me, I'm going to find out.
You are? What do you mean? You're not going to leave me?
I'm not just going to sit here.
But don't you see? A dozen times a dozen hours are over for me.
And you're superstitious, too? Enough to be scared by the threat in this chain letter? Enough to maybe hurt yourself by doing some fool thing or other because you are scared?
Oh, well, no, John, no, why, of course not.
All right, then. I'm going to get you a bodyguard from the local police. Where's your phone?
They're on the stand in the corner. But now, Johnny...
Yeah?
If the police come around, wouldn't that warn anybody who might be coming here to harm me?
Mr. Cartwright.
Yes, Johnny?
There are times when, Lenny, I think you're... Well, I think a lot of things about you.
Oh, sure, I know, yes. Wild and crazy, eccentric old man.
To be very blunt about it, yes.
You am. Maybe I am. A little bit.
Well, when the chips are down, you're no fool.
Oh, no, I wouldn't be too sure about that.
I've never really given much thought to this chain letter thing before. Sure, I've tossed some of them into the wastebasket. But maybe I should have investigated them, even the little ones. Because they all work on the same principle. They all contain a threat, and they all capitalize on fear. Look at that. It says... Exclusive list of honest, wealthy, retired people.
Yes.
Why, a list like that can be bought from 100 sources, from companies that cater to the mail order business.
Yes, of course.
Maybe I'm all wrong, but suppose somebody bought a list of wealthy people all over the country. Suppose he went to Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, where Kenworthy lived.
All right, yeah. Suppose he rented a post office box. Then he sent out a couple of hundred of these letters, maybe 1,000. A lot of rich people live out there. The letters were all the same, with his name at the top of the list. Then half a dozen fictitious ones.
Fictitious?
Yeah. Any names on that list that you recognize?
Let me see here. No.
All right. So maybe only 100 people were scared into sending the money, carrying on the chain. After all, like you said, it isn't $100.
You're right, Johnny. And 100 people at $100 apiece.
$10,000. Even half of that would make it worth sending out those letters. By the time the 6 days are up, he's collected enough, so he skips town.
And people like Kenworthy and Perriman, you think he killed them to carry out the warning?
Well, frankly, I doubt it. Just the same, I think I'll call the Lakewood police and have somebody sent out here to look after you.
Even though. What is it, Johnny?
Maybe I was wrong, Mr. Cartwright. Your phone wire has been cut.
Johnny, the phone. The telephone isn't working.
Ask me, Mr. Cartwright. Somebody's cut the wires.
Then the threat in that letter, it means that somebody's come here to carry it out.
Only one way to make sure. You stay inside here while I go out and take a look around.
Maybe that's what they want you to do, go out there in the dark, huh? Johnny, I'm going with you.
No, you're staying right here. I'll be back in a minute.
But there may be some danger.
Or it may be that your phone is just out of order. We'll see. There was enough moonlight for me to see where the line off the telephone pole led to a connector box at the back end of the house. There wasn't enough light for me to notice a trailing vine as I edged my way along. So what happened? I tripped and fell flat on my face. Before I could get back up on my feet.
So you come out to see what was wrong?
Oh!
You were, Mr. Cartwright.
Oh!
For not reading your mail real good.
I finally came to. I found myself on a big leather sofa in one corner of Mr. Cartwright's library. My head felt like it had been the target for a bolt of lightning, and the lightning hadn't missed. A familiar face slowly came into focus.
That's right, Johnny. Another little sip of this brandy, and you feel much better.
Mr. Cartwright.
Here you are.
Thanks. Thanks.
I was afraid there might be somebody out there. So I sneaked on out after you.
Yeah?
Yes. And I took along an old cricket bat.
Oh, no.
Yes. And when I saw what he was doing to you, I let him have it. Oh, yes, with all I had. Oh, I slayed him.
Well, who is he? Where is he?
I had an awful time dragging him into the house, but I did it, Johnny. Yes, indeed, I did it. And I locked him up in the broom closet, too. I locked him up tight.
Good. I told you you're okay when the chips are down.
Oh, it's just that I caught him off guard.
Oh, sure. But now if I can get up on my feet...
Yes, the boy.
Yeah, I think I'd like to talk to him. Our visitor turned out to be a pug-ugly gorilla, hardly the brains behind a chain letter racket. Except for admitting he'd been hired by somebody in New York to come up here and give Mr. Cartwright a beating, then make it look like a burglary job, he refused to talk. So we locked him up again, and I laid my splitting head on a pillow for some much-needed rest. By the time I awoke in the morning, feeling somewhat better, Mr. Cartwright had fixed me a mess of bacon and eggs for breakfast.
It's you, Johnny. I just walked down to the corner gas station and called the telephone company. And you know something? They came out here and had that line all connected up again in less than an hour.
Good.
Yes, it just like that. So maybe I'll buy a couple thousand more shares of stock in the telephone company, huh? Just to show them how I appreciate it.
Yeah. What about our little pal? I mean, the one who slugged me last night.
You know, Sir Johnny, I decided that after the way he behaved last night, he doesn't deserve any breakfast.
No,
No, I mean, where is he?
Yeah, he's still locked up in the broom closet. Do you think I ought to call the police to come and get him?
No, not yet. Maybe I can beat some information out of him if we need it.
Well, of course we need it. Don't we?
Now, let's wait and see. First, I'd like to make a phone call. The call was to my old friend, Lieutenant Randy Singer, New York Police Department, 18th Precinct.
Post office box 101.
Yes.
Postal zone 84.
And if he comes around to pick up his mail, you nab him.
On what charges, Johnny?
Fraud, sending threatening letters through the mail, or anything you can think of.
Yeah, okay, I'll dig up something. But I can't hold him for long unless you come down here and prefer something definite against him. And, Johnny...
Yeah?
You still haven't told me what this is all about. And if I didn't know you...
Just you grab hold of that box holder if he shows, and I hope he does.
Yeah, well, just you be sure and get on down here.
Mr. Cartwright and I piled into my car. We drove over to call on first the wealthy widow Templeman, then the retired millionaire, Mr. Winterbottom.
Why, yes, Mr. Dollar, I was just about to mail in $100 to the name at the top of the list.
Don't.
And later I'd mail out the other letters to some of my friends.
Don't do it.
But if I don't, something terrible might happen to me. The chain letter said so.
If you do, it'll be a violation of federal law.
What?
That's right. And you could end up in prison for it.
Prison?
Well, Mrs. Templeman...
Is Mr. Dollar?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Better do as he says, Mr. Winterbottom.
But I didn't realize. I didn't know
you
that...
You do now, sir. Then back to Mr. Cartwright's home on the hill, just in time to answer the telephone. Johnny Dollar.
Johnny, I've got him. And what a fun.
Yeah, Randy?
Daniel Stringer, alias Danny McKay, alias Willie Daniels, and half a dozen other things. I watched him unload the post office box myself, Johnny. Then I tailed him to a cheap rooming house.
Go on.
When I nabbed him, he was opening, must have been 50, 60 letters he'd got. Chain letters. And Johnny?
Yeah?
You know what he was taking out of them?
I can guess, Randy.
Thousands. Enough money to hold him on suspicion of almost anything. And Johnny...
Still here.
He also had a bunch of new letters he'd written. All addressed to folks in a wealthy section down near Germantown, PA.
Then hang on to him, Randy. I'll be down to make formal charges against him.
Okay.
Maybe I'll pick up a chief inspector from the post office department to do it.
Okay, Johnny.
Yeah. Maybe some of those chain letters, the little ones, are harmless. But again, maybe they're not. And they're all against the law. But there's only one thing to do. Avoid them like the plague. Or better still, if you get one, take it right down to your local postmaster. He'll know how to go about helping to stamp out this racket. And believe me, that's all it is, a racket. Expense account total, including mileage on my car and the trip to New York and back, $27.35. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, mystery, suspense, and, yeah, murder. Take me to Columbus, Ohio. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Howard McNear, Paul Dubov, Frank Ursel, and Herb Vigran. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Jim Matthews speaking.
Thanks for joining us here at 1001 Radio Days. If you enjoy our show, please do take a moment and send us a kind review. And remember to share our show with others. Until next time, everyone, stay safe, and we'll be back soon.